Chapter 67 AMS Predator. Gwen felt rather ridiculous while moving from the infirmary to the bridge. Procedure aboard a ship engaged in combat action was for every crewman to keep at least one and preferably two safety lines secured to contact points at all times. Fixing the heavy metal clips to the secure rings was not the effortless task that the crew of Predator made it look like. Fortunately, runner bars stretching along the length of the deck and some of the internal hallways made the task simpler, if not easy. But nonetheless, it took her several minutes to travel no more than 80 feet. She reached the bridge just as Commander Creedy began bellowing orders to the ship's crew, and the deck tilted slightly beneath her feet as Predator began to bank into a turn. She was about to climb the steep staircase up to the bridge when the captain of the immobilized Mist Shark gripped the handrails and simply slid down them, landing effortlessly on the deck and nearly bowling Gwen over in the process. The tall woman gave her an impatient glance, took in the grease and grime on her clothes, and said, "Good God in heaven! Is Journeyman allowing women into his engine room now? What is happening to the world?"
"Excuse me?" Gwen said.
"I suppose," the woman said, and moved at a gliding run down the deck, seemingly uncaring of the way the ship had begun to tilt and shudder, to where a launch had been tied up to Predator's flank. She vaulted the rail to the launch, nodding to the two rough-looking men crewing it, then began untying the mooring lines. Gwen blinked at this behavior. Was the woman not effectively a captive? Was she escaping? Why on earth was no one putting a stop to it?
"Halt!"
Gwen said, in what she hoped was an authoritative tone. She began to lift her gauntlet to take aim at the escapee, then remembered, as she raised her arm, that she was not wearing her gauntlet, having spent most of the last day working with components of the ship's engines. Rather than abort the gesture entirely, which she felt would have looked weak and indecisive, she pointed a stern finger instead and said,
"You there! Halt!"
The enemy captain looked up at her and burst out in a hearty belly laugh. Then she hauled against a lever that slowly kicked the launch out away from Predator. The launch began to fall behind Predator at once, since she wasn't being driven by any kind of etheric sail. Before the launch fell out of sight astern, the enemy captain called,
"You've bigger problems than me now, girl!"
And then the launch fell out of sight behind them. Gwen chewed on her lip for a second, then turned and laboriously ascended to the bridge. By the time she got there, Predator was fully underway, sailing swiftly into the morning sun, so that she had to squint against its brilliance as she secured her safety lines near where Captain Grimm stood by the pilot's stand.
"Good morning, Miss Lancaster," Grimm said. "What can I do for you?"
"That woman, the captain of the enemy ship," Gwen said. "Did you let her go free?"
"Yes," Grimm said. A muscle twitched in his jawline.
"Why on earth would you do that?"
she asked. "I saw no point in her dying."
He paused for a moment, adjusted his peaked cap carefully, and then said,
"I saw no point in giving her an opportunity to distract us during a combat action."
Gwen felt her eyes widen.
"Oh dear, is that what we're doing?"
"Odds seem excellent," Grimm said. "Put your goggles on, Miss Lancaster."
Gwen blinked at him, then remembered and cursed herself for looking like an idiot who had never travelled by airship before. Leaving one's eyes unshielded at this altitude was an invitation to any number of etheric mental disorders, as well as to eventual blindness. She settled her tinted goggles into position.
"I'm afraid I don't understand. Why not keep her?"
"If I had, her ship, seeing help on the way, would certainly have unlimbered her guns and engaged us. We could likely have destroyed her, but in doing so would have cost us precious time and delay, and we would have been unlikely to do it with our shroud intact."
The captain glanced toward the rear of the ship and said, "We need every bit of power we have to keep us moving and to fuel the shroud if we are to have a chance of survival."
Releasing Captain Ransom was an implicit truce, and the least evil option available to me.
I see, Gwen said. Am I interfering with the ship's operation by being here?
Again he began a quick reply, and again restrained himself for a few seconds before answering. Not at present, he said. Currently we are underway. It remains to be seen whether we can escape Itasca.
Ah, Gwen said. I thought you should know, Captain, that Master Ferris's gear has been returned to him. He and Miss Folly are in the infirmary now.
Grimm arched a brow and turned fully to her for the first time since she'd arrived on the bridge. Will he be able to help my men?
He said he would try, Gwen said.
She gave her head a little shake.
The poor old man looked awful.
He's had a difficult time of it the past few hours, Grimm answered. He flipped down the telescopic mounted on his goggles and peered past Gwen for several seconds before he grimaced and said, They're breaking out their chase guns.
Kettle turned his head and squinted back at the shape of an airship far astern.
Itasca, Gwen assumed. From there, the pilot said, his tone annoyed. They must have the new model bow guns. So much for that advantage, Grimm said.
Are we going to give battle then, Captain? Gwen asked.
Not for very long, Kettle said darkly from his control station.
Itasca is a battle cruiser, Miss Lancaster,
Grimm said, by way of explanation. She's a great deal larger and more heavily armed and armoured than Predator. We cannot realistically survive a pitched battle with her.
Then we are running from her? Gwen asked.
We're trying, Kettle said.
I know nothing of aerial combat, Captain, Gwen said. But would it not be wise to descend into the mist and avoid action that way?
Under most circumstances, Miss Gwen, that is exactly what I would do, Grimm answered.
Gwen looked over the side of the ship, and yet we seem to be ascending.
Grimm nodded.
Itasca was fully underway by the time we spotted her. While we were standing still, it was necessary for us to open as much distance as possible, as quickly as possible, and we're lighter than Itasca. All that armor plate weighs her down. It takes Predator relatively less energy to ascend, so to keep pace with us, she has to reduce power from her other systems to maintain an ascension as she moves forward.
By running up as well as away, Predator was quicker off the mark,
Gwen asked.
Grimm nodded in approval. Just so. Doing so kept Itasca from catching up to us and overwhelming us immediately.
And once you're sure we are out of her cannon range, you'll dive back down?
Gwen asked. Normally, yes, Grimm said with a grimace. But Journeyman hasn't finished putting the ship back together. She's not running at her best, and she's not able to handle a combat dive yet. We could descend slowly, but if we do so, Itasca will be able to use her weight and momentum to make up distance on us and bring us within range of her guns.
Then what are we going to do? Gwen asked.
Run like hell and pray, Kettle said.
Grimm stiffened suddenly and said,
She's firing her chasers. Evasive starboard.
Gwen turned to look behind them. There was a bright flash of scarlet and white light from the pursuing ship, and a brilliant little pinpoint, like a tiny star, appeared and grew swiftly, unsettlingly larger. Even as she saw that, the ship heaved beneath them as Kettle took her into a swift bank, then settled her down again almost immediately onto her original course. Gwen's stomach flopped and wobbled, and despite her secured safety lines, she was all but thrown from her feet. She could not take her eyes from the incoming fire as she did. It flashed across the distance between the two ships in no more than a breath, growing and growing as it came. The sphere of energy detonated perhaps 50 yards ahead of the ship and far off to their port side, erupting into a cloud of pure fire, roiling flame dozens of yards across. The explosion was loud enough to make the planking of the deck vibrate. Gwen felt herself flinch from both the sound and the intensity of the light.
God in heaven, she breathed. What happens if that hits us?
We're at the edge of her range, Grimm replied. When the energy of the blast is that dispersed, our shroud is best able to absorb it. Predator can take numerous direct hits from this distance.
But our web isn't so lucky,
Kettle said.
I don't understand, Gwen said.
Incoming fire, Grimm said again. Evasive port.
Once more, Gwen's stomach lurched as Kettle wove in the opposite direction for a few breathless seconds, then trimmed Predator neatly. Again, a thundercloud of fire burst to one side of the ship, but this time there were flickers of light at the very edge of the translucent cobwebs of her starboard ether silk web.
As you can see, Grimm said,
our ether silk web extends beyond the protection offered by Predator's energy shroud. The web is vulnerable to incoming fire.
Could you not shorten it to bring it within the shroud's protection? Gwen asked. Would that not protect the web?
And reduce our velocity proportionately as a result, Grimm replied. We'd slow to a crawl. Incoming! Evasive ascension!
Gwen was all but flung down to the deck as Predator abruptly climbed. She felt certain that her stomach was doing its best to share her skull with her brains before Kettle leveled out again. She found herself gripping the railing desperately to maintain her footing. This time the blast exploded a shade farther ahead of the ship, if a good deal below, which meant that Itasca was closer to Predator than she had been for the previous shot. Which meant...
Then that's why Itasca is shooting at us, Gwen said. She's trying to burn away enough of our web to slow us down so she can kill us.
We call it raking the web, Miss Gwen, Grimm said politely, and that is exactly what she means to do. We can keep the distance open by continuing to ascend, force her to run uphill after us for a time.
Why? Gwen asked. What happens then?
We run out of up, Kettle said with a grim chortle. Go up too far and the air is too thin to breathe.
Gwen felt a little short of breath already.
Then what hope have we?
Itasca is overpowered, even for her size, Grimm said. She's running 3 core crystals at maximum to keep this pace with us, and she'll be running her steam turbine all out too. That means her systems are more complex, more prone to overheating, component failure, and other technical problems. She can sprint as fast as we can, Kettle clarified. But we can keep up this pace for days at a time. It's what we're made to do.
Grimm nodded.
The longer we can keep this race going, the more likely something is to give on Itasca. Incoming! Evasive starboard!
Kettle wove the ship to one side, and this time Itasca's bow gun claimed a small portion of Predator's web on the port side.
Can't you duck any further to one side? Gwen asked.
The more we weave side to side while Itasca runs in a straight line, the more distance she makes up on us, Grimm said.
Mr. Kettle knows his business.
Unfortunately, Kettle said sourly. We don't get lucky. We're going to knock off work before lunch, Skip.
I'll accept luck if we can find any, Grimm acknowledged. But be of good hope, Mr. Kettle.
Itasca's web is vulnerable too, and she can't dodge, and she should just about be within range.
He turned to a speaking tube and called out, Stern gunnery deck! Bridge!
Creedy's voice came back out of the speaking tube, tinny and distant.
Stern guns, aye!
Rake her web, XO, Grimm said. Fire at will.
Fire at will, aye,
Creedy said.
A second later there was a howl of discharging cannon, and a blue-white sphere of fire of their own went hurtling back toward the Auroran ship. The explosion looked tiny in the distance, and there was an odd, long delay before its cough of distant thunder caught up with Predator. Gwen noted a faint shimmer in the air, and realized that she was looking at a large section of ether silk web being burned away.
Excellent shooting, Creedy!
Grimm called into the speaking tube, even as Kettle threw the ship into another sharp ascension to avoid fire.
Pour it on!
Aye, sir!
Came Creedy's voice.
Thank you, sir!
Why, Gwen said, if we keep shooting like that, we'll lose her in no time.
Except she hangs a lot more web than we do, miss, Kettle said. She keeps a lot more web in her reels than Predator can.
and she's got 3 times the chase armament we do."
Gwen felt somewhat indignant at these facts.
"Well, that hardly seems fair."
Captain Grimm chuckled beneath his breath.
"Itasca's made for exactly this kind of work," he said.
"Then how will you defeat her?"
Gwen asked.
Grimm held on as Kettle wove through another evasive maneuver. The two aeronauts took it in stride, evidently staying upright through an act of sheer unconscious will. Gwen felt as though her stomach had decided to depart her body for warmer climes, and she desperately struggled to keep from retching in front of the captain and Mr. Kettle.
"Without the ability to dive,
I can't," Grimm said. "I'll keep raking her web, but eventually, probably within the next half hour, she's going to take down enough of ours to overhaul us and pound us to bits."
"I see," Gwen said.
She swallowed.
"I don't suppose her captain will give up."
"Why would he?"
Grimm asked. His teeth showed in a sudden, feral smile.
"He knows it as well as I do, after all. Barring an act of fortune on our behalf, the outcome of this chase is inevitable."
"Oh,"
Gwen said.
"You have a plan of some sort, then?"
"Of sorts," Grimm said. He put a hand on the rail as the ship rocked wildly to the side again, and more web was chewed away by the heat of a blast. A distant boom marked the detonation of a shot from Predator's lone stern cannon. Gwen frowned and considered his words for a moment.
"Captain Grimm," she said, "you knew escape was nearly hopeless from the beginning."
"Yes."
"Then if your goal was simply to escape, and remaining within sight of Itasca was certain death, it follows that risking a dive was our most sensible option. Granted, this ship may not have been able to take the strain, but it seems even the dire risk of that offers better odds for survival than this chase."
Grimm nodded again.
"Precisely true."
Gwen frowned at him.
"A gambit, then?"
"We've been marking our path with signal rockets since we left Spire Albion. Currently, we are following our original course back toward the Spire. If our signals have been spotted, and if any ships of the fleet have elected to follow us, we may have support, and if so, we may be able to take Itasca."
"There are a great many ifs in that statement, Captain,"
Gwen noted.
"Yes."
"You are risking everyone's life in an effort to take a single enemy ship."
Grimm arched an eyebrow, and his manner became intent.
"Not just a ship. A storied enemy ship, Miss Lancaster. Whether or not official statements have been made, we are now at war with Spire Aurora. A war that they are winning, handily, given the damage they've inflicted to the landing shipyards."
"And you believe the loss of a single ship will counter that sort of blow?"
"Objectively, no,"
Grimm said. "But wars are not simply about objective measures. They are about will, Miss Lancaster. About belief. The disruption the Aurorans will cause to our economy will not be remotely equal to the loss of any single ship. But if we can counter by taking down a ship like Itasca, we might reduce entirely the damage done to the fighting spirit of all of Albion. It is vital that we not be made to seem wholly helpless in the opening moments of the war. Once a nation ceases to believe that they can win a war, that war is lost."
Gwen frowned.
"And you're willing to risk the lives of your crew on such a prospect?"
"And yours, miss,"
he said quietly.
"On the chance that a friendly ship might have seen your signal rockets?"
"It is less a gambit than a throw of the dice,"
Grimm said. He had turned back to watch ahead of the ship, rocking easily as Kettle took her through another evasive maneuver.
"But they are my dice."
"What if Itasca breaks off? Surely she knows you are running toward Albion, toward our fleet."
Grimm tilted his head, as if he had never considered the question before.
Then I suppose we return home with minor damage easily repaired. But she won't."
"Why not?"
"Her captain was sent out to bring Predator down last month, to make a statement.
He missed us. A captain put in command of a ship like a Tasker will be professional, brilliant, ambitious, and hungry, miss. He won't want to go home without feathering his cap with Predator's wreckage. There was a sharp whistle from below, and a moment later the bridge speaking tube rattled with a tinny voice.
Bridge! Ventral lookout!
Captain Grimm turned to the speaking tube.
Bridge here. Proceed.
Contact, skipper!
Came an aeronaut's excited voice.
5 miles dead ahead of us, down at the cloud line. Skip, I think it's glorious. She's descended into the mist and is ready to pop up.
Ha! Grimm said, smiling fiercely. Good eyes, Mr. McCauley. Mr. Kettle, when?
Kettle squinted ahead of them and then glanced back at Itasca, taking Predator through another lateral slalom as he considered the question.
Start a gradual descent now, skipper, Kettle said. They'll build up speed and momentum on us. They'll close the range, but it'll keep their eyes on us and make it that much harder for them to pull out when they spot Glorious.
Grimm nodded sharply and folded his gloved hands behind his back.
Concur. Proceed.
Kettle nodded, and, after his next evasive manoeuvre, put the ship on a downward angle that made Gwen's stomach rather unsettled, as the whole of the sky seemed to open up from the unfettered vista offered from the ship's bridge.
Glorious,
Gwen said, fighting back flutters in her stomach.
That's Commodore Rook's ship, is it not?
Yes,
Grimm said in a severely polite, rigidly neutral tone.
I believe it is.
Can't believe we're polishing the apple he's about to pick,
Kettle muttered.
Now, Mr. Kettle, Grimm said. There's a very great deal of angry Itasca behind us. I am well contented to have help from any ship in the fleet under the circumstances.
Kettle muttered something darkly beneath his breath, and Gwen frowned at the pilot.
Captain, is there a matter for concern here?
That Grimm paused for a thoughtful moment before he answered spoke volumes in direct contrast to his words, Gwen thought.
Not particularly, he said. Glorious is a battle cruiser as well, equal to the task of engaging Itasca, and Commodore Rook has a solid, competent fleet crew.
I note, sir, Gwen said, that you do not say that Commodore Rook is solid and competent.
That is not my place to judge, Grimm replied steadily. He has advanced quite capably through the ranks.
Kettle snorted heavily, soaring through another arc to avoid the rapidly expanding shape of an enemy blast sphere.
He's a pompous, lecherous ass, Gwen noted calmly, devoid of the wit God in heaven gives to a simpleton. But he has a certain rat-like cunning, I suppose. He looks pretty enough in a uniform, too.
Grimm turned his head sharply toward her, and then away again. She could tell by the tightening in his cheek seen in rear profile that he was smiling.
I would not presume to contradict your opinion, Miss Lancaster, he said. That's because the skipper don't fight battles he can't win, Miss Gwen,
Kettle noted. The regular thunder of enemy munitions detonating grew fractionally louder.
Skipper, Kettle said, a warning tone in his voice. If Itasca gets any closer, there won't be time to evade. I'll have to start weaving. We might not make it to Glorious.
Grimm turned to the speaking tube.
Engineering, bridge.
Journeyman's voice clattered out of the speaking tube.
Aye, Skipper.
If there's anything else left in her, Mr. Journeyman, we need it right now.
I'm stunned she hasn't buckled on us already, Skip,
the engineer called back.
Some of these runs are being held together with bloody twine. But I'll see what can be done. Engine room out.
The next few moments were, Gwen thought, uniquely terrifying. There was no kind of violent action happening near her. Not an enemy to be seen as anything more than a boy's model airship soaring in the distance behind them. There was nothing she could prepare herself to fight. Instead, there was simply regular roaring thunder and boiling fire rending the air nearby, sending gusts of hot, ozone-scented air across the deck of Predator, promising a sudden and violent death. The ship rocked in increasingly severe evasive maneuvers, each necessary to preserve her life, yet each also allowing the enemy to inch nearer. She thought she might go mad with the unnerving contrasts of the brilliant sunlight, the crisp, chill breeze in the air, and the thundering voice of aerial battle. It made her feel utterly helpless. Because, she realized, she was. There was absolutely nothing she could do to save herself from sharing whatever fate Predator met, apart from throwing herself over the rail at once. She had no training, no instinct, no knowledge that would help her survive in this circumstance. Her fate was, she realized, entirely in the hands of another person. Captain Grimm stood steady in his place on the bridge, hands folded behind his back, his safety lines tight and neat, the very image of what an airship captain was supposed to be, holding all their lives in his hands, and doing it without bowing beneath the burden or complaining of the weight. It was a form of courage that Gwen had never considered before. There was no way in heaven or on earth that this man was a coward who deserved to be cast from the fleet, whatever the records may have said. Gwen's breath suddenly caught in her throat. In the past several moments, Predator had sailed down near to the misty mesosphere with the Tasker gaining on her the entire while. There, ahead of them in the mist, she had spotted the shadowy form of Glorious, ready to burst forth into the teeth of the enemy.
"Let's not stand in Commodore Rook's way. Prepare for evasive ascension, Mr. Kettle," Grimm noted, his voice entirely calm. "Steady. Steady."
An endless second passed, and Predator's luck ran out. A burning sphere from Itasca's bow gun exploded exactly amidst her portside web, sending the entire thing up in flames in a single violently blazing sheet of burning ether silk. The reaction of the ship was immediate. She slowed, throwing Gwen forward against the pull of the safety lines that strained to hold her in place, the heavy leather belt around her midsection pinching hard against her flesh, cutting into her. The ship slewed heavily to starboard, pulled off balance by the preponderance of functioning web on that side, her timbers groaning and creaking at the sudden shift of forces. Gwen actually saw one of the runs to one of the portside trim crystals fail in a shower of sparks, finally collapsing under the strain of hard use without the stabilization of solidly established systems to support it. The port side of the ship abruptly dropped a good 2 feet, bang, jarring Gwen and driving her brutally to one knee on the deck. Pain flared up her leg. Grimm was thrown to his knees on the deck as well, but he never lost concentration on the moment, his voice rising to a bellow.
"Evasive ascension now, Mr. Kettle. Reef the starboard web. Kettle, wheel her around to bring our starboard array into position to support Glorious."
Kettle, held steady by the braces of the pilot's position, clenched his teeth and wrenched Predator into a sudden, lopsided climb, even as the ship lost more velocity, allowing for Itasca to rush in for a killing stroke. Just as Glorious came surging up from the mesosphere, her broadside to Itasca, firing her 30 cannon in rapid successive howling salvos of 10 guns each. The noise was too loud, the light simply too bright to be believed. Gwen found herself lifting her hands toward her eyes and ears and face as thunder and lightning pounded against them. Predator whirled with drunken grace around her vertical axis until her own, more slender but still deadly broadside came to bear on the enemy ship and opened up in howling thunder. Itasca vanished behind a wall of flame and deafening sound and roiling smoke. It seemed incredible to Gwen that any ship could do anything but be obliterated by such an outpouring of power. But Itasca did. The ship came sailing gracefully through the thunder and fire, her web blazing like an enormous halo all around her, her energy shroud glowing more brightly than 1,000 lumen crystals. Some of the blasts had gotten through, and her prow had been smashed and warped out of shape as if some titan had taken an enormous sledgehammer to her, and two of the three cannon in her bow gunnery deck had been reduced to smouldering ruin. But the vessel was in one piece, and already slewing her stern around with more grace than any ship so large should possess, even as she ascended. Glorious's salvo fire smashed against the Tasker's shroud, but as the ship rotated, she brought fresh, undamaged portions of her protective sphere to bear against the fire, shrugging off the blows like a veteran brawler. Within a few breaths, she had brought her own port broadside to bear, and it fired in a single titanic salvo amidships on Glorious. Glorious's shroud, overloaded at the relatively smaller point of impact, gave her less protection than Itasca's had. Armor rang and rent and screamed as cannon tore Glorious's flank, wiping away half a dozen of her guns and smashing one of her three portside mastworks. Secondary explosions, probably from one of the cannon, blew a hole in her guts from inside the armor, sending splinters of shattered deck and planking spinning and howling throughout the nearby compartments. But Itasca wasn't finished. Rather than slowing, she kept rushing ahead, and her sharp angle of ascension carried her just over the top of Glorious's glowing shroud. Itasca managed the role of a much lighter ship as she went, and brought her starboard broadside to bear, aiming down at Glorious's deck from point-blank range. She fired in titanic fury, and there was only so much that shroud and armor alike could do at such a range, from that relatively vulnerable angle. Sections of Glorious fully 30 feet across simply vanished, charred to clouds of soot. Her main dorsal mast was cut in half and plummeted toward the deck. Human screams could not be heard amidst that destruction, but Gwen's imagination placed them for her near the small figures she could see consumed in violence that rendered even the doughtiest mortal form into a glass figurine. Glorious listed to one side, groaning and shrieking in her pain. But even so, incredibly, the ship withstood the horrible destruction visited upon her by the enemy, wounded but not destroyed, her heavy armor enabling her to survive the punishment laid out upon her. Itasca, meanwhile, rocked back to level, her steam turbines chugging and roaring, giving her some maneuverability, even as her aeronauts labored to deploy more lengths of her ether silk web from her masts to harness the greater power and grace they offered. If she was not untouched, she had been marked only lightly in comparison to the ship that had appeared to have every advantage on her in the outset of the engagement, and she was ready to fight on.
"God in heaven!"
Kettle swore, without a trace of mockery in his tone.
"Now that is how you handle a ship."
"Keep us moving, Mr. Kettle," Captain Grimm snapped. "Circle us toward Glorious and stay in her shadow."
He raised his voice to bellow, "Guns, keep raking Itasca's web. We've got to keep her lamed so that she can't get more fire into the holes she's put in Glorious's armor."
"Rake her web, aye,"
Commander Creedy's voice echoed. Predator's cannon shrieked, and sections of Itasca's web went up in flames, even as the large ship's reels spooled more out. Itasca's momentum slowed, the ship hovering sluggishly for a moment in which Glorious's massive firepower could make a proper reply to Itasca's greeting of a moment before.
"Ha!" Grimm said, clenching his fist. "We can have her yet."
"Guts and rot!"
snarled Kettle, sudden and furious.
"Captain! Look at Glorious!"
Grimm's head whipped around to stare at the fleet battle cruiser. Over the distance, Gwen's stunned hearing could just barely make out a loud, frantic ringing sound. It took her only a second or two to recognize it as the same bell cadence Predator herself had used to signal emergency maneuvers. And seconds later she watched as Glorious plunged back down into the mists, moving in a rapid, panicked-looking descent. Gwen stared after the wounded Leviathan, stunned. Only the swirling mists remained, spinning in a slow, circular vortex where Glorious had vanished.
"The coward!"
Kettle howled.
"Damn you, Rook! You rotten-crotched coward!"
Did you think you could take a fighter like a Tasker without getting a few lumps along the way?
Gwen shook her head dazedly, her eyes moving to Captain Grimm. The man was staring after the vanished Glorious, just as she had been, and she could see the truth in the sickened horror in his eyes. Glorious had left Predator behind to die. Dimly, Gwen could hear Itasca's aeronauts howling in wild defiance and exultation, as well they might, having just turned an ambush back upon their attackers to send them diving out of the blue sky for the cover of the mists. And then Itasca began turning, to bring her broadside to bear on lamed, fragile Predator.